Welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club. We are a community of practitioners focused on helping your clients achieve meaningful and socially significant behavior change. This is your host, Matt Harrington.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Behaviorist Book Club. We're going to be breaking down another ABA research article for you in about 20 minutes or less, perfect for your daily commute or anytime you're washing the dishes or something like that. Without further ado, let's hop right into it. I have a fun one for us today. It is a assessment and intervention from Helvey and Colleagues 2023. It's called Evaluating Preference for Functional and Non-Functional Stimuli in the Treatment of Destructive Behavior. So this is a really interesting article because even though it doesn't directly say it, this is a comment on the isolated versus synthesized contingency discussion, right? I'm going to call it a discussion and not an argument because I'm in a good mood, but let's review that real fast. The isolated functional analysis, what does that mean? Generally speaking, the isolated functional analysis simply refers to a functional analysis where we analyze functions in an isolated setting. Typically, that means a different condition for attention, escape, tangible, and then a play condition to evaluate for automatic. That does not mean that this assessment can't be modified or changed or done in a bunch of different ways, but that's typically what people mean when they talk about an isolated functional analysis. This is different than a synthesized functional analysis, where instead of having a different condition for each function, we combine conditions and functions into one and simply have a test where you might have demands being present and then escape from that demands into access to tangibles as one condition and then a play condition as a baseline. A lot of times you'll hear this as the functional analysis versus ISCA debate, conversation, whatever you want to call it. At its core, though, this is really just asking a simple question. Is this person reinforced by a single functional reinforcer, such as attention solely, or is this person reinforced by a group of functions working together, acting together to create a strong EO? And the debate continues to this day. But what's cool here is that we're moving a little bit past this simplistic, I like isolated, you like synthesized, you're more work, you're less work, we have better outcomes, etc. And we're starting to ask some interesting questions. And that's really why I wanted to talk about this article, because I got to be honest, burnt out of that argument of isolated versus synthesized. Because as a practitioner, I've used both successfully, and I'll continue to use both depending on what the client needs. So I'm a little burnt out on that debate, but this is a pretty interesting conversation, and it gives us, I think, some pretty valuable insights moving forward in this conversation. So let's get started. We're going to be focused on including functional and non-functional reinforcement within an intervention to see what is more preferred and more effective for the client. So this isn't an argument about ISCA versus functional analysis because there was no ISCA conducted. All we conducted were isolated functional analyses. But what this is doing is, hey, when we reach the intervention phase, if we have something that is a non-functional reinforcer, like tangibles for a kid who is functionally reinforced by escape. If we do escape to tangibles, is that eventual treatment that we develop, is that going to be more preferred to a simple, isolated, you're reinforced by escape, so contingent on your FCR, you get escape? Which one is going to be better preferred, and will there be any difference in outcomes coming from it? So that was the purpose of this article, is just to answer that question. What is the role of non-functional reinforcement in the overall intervention process? So there were three learners. They were aged 3, 6, and 14, all who engaged in aggression and self-injury. The functional analysis was pretty much standard. They looked at function. They were looking for, like I said, not only functional but also non-functional stimuli, and the caregivers had a lot of input in the functional analysis. It's similar, looking at types of attention, different types of tangibles, and escape materials. And this is going to come into play later on. So just remember that the functional analysis materials and the EOs weren't just random. They were actually specifically set up by the caregivers that were very valuable to that learner. The intervention was also pretty straightforward as well. It was simply differential reinforcement of communication, FCT, more or less. It was a multi-element analysis of both functional DRC and combined DRC. And then we looked at a concurrent chains arrangements to evaluate preference of each of those two conditions. So the functional DRC would take the reinforcement that was identified in the functional analysis. Let's say for this learner, they were reinforced by escape from demands, and they were not reinforced by any other condition tested. So their functional reinforcer was escape. Therefore, in the DRC, demands would be presented and communication would result in escape from those demands. That's functional DRC. In the combined DRC condition, let's remember that escape was the function, tangibles and attention were not the function. So DRC, the communication, would result in escape from the demands, the functional reinforcer, as well as the provision of access to tangibles, the non-functional reinforcer. Those were the two conditions. And what we were really looking for, remember, is does behavior decrease regardless of which condition you're using? Is one better than the other? And which one is ultimately more preferred via the concurrent chains arrangement? The result was pretty interesting, actually. All of the behaviors decreased. There was one client who needed a little bit of help. It was like a blocking RIRD procedure. It was pretty strange. I think reading it, it felt like they were going, they presumed this behavior was part of a ritual or a behavior chain, and so they treated it like that. It was a little interesting. This was a brief report, so we didn't have a lot of time to dive into things like that. But for everyone else, things went exactly as you'd expect, which is that behavior decreased across all conditions. So that means with the combined DRC, behavior decreased, and with the singular function DRC, behavior also decreased. And this isn't really that surprising, because in both conditions, a functional reinforcer was identified and present. So in the isolated DRC condition, escape, which was the functional reinforcer in the example we're using, was present. And in the combined DRC, it was escape to access, meaning escape was also present. So it makes sense that you would see lots of reduction in across the board. The preference was pretty interesting as well. So two out of the three exclusively preferred the combined DRC. They did not prefer, rather, I can't say they did not prefer, they did not choose the isolated differential communication condition. They only chose the combined differential communication condition. The last person, so two preferred combined DRC, the other person preferred either. They were happy with both of them. This is a pretty interesting finding, because it shows that combining your reinforcement from a non-functional and a functional does increase the preference of that intervention. The caregivers also reported that it was really common at home for multiple functions to be present within the home. So let's say they were asking the person to sweep. Oftentimes when they didn't want to sweep, they escaped from that and went to their room, which is where all their toys were. So like I said, the caregiver input here is pretty important, because generally speaking, I think without the caregiver input, we would have gotten a much different outcome, especially with preference. For example, if I had just went to Target and grabbed 5 random toys for the tangible condition and then used that as the non-functional reinforcement in the combined DRC, well, they probably wouldn't have cared about it as much as, well, if the caregiver said these are their favorite 5 things in the world, of course they're going to want that combined condition, because they also get access to those things as well. So overview, I thought this was a really good article to look at the advantages of combining reinforcement. And I don't want to get into the debate, but I do want to contextualize this finding within this isolated versus synthesized argument. Because one very common point that somebody who's arguing for an isolated only approach to functional analysis is that the ISCA over reinforces. The ISCA says, you're a function and you're a function, we're all functions, let's just put them all together in this fun little condition, and that's too much. These learners, really, they would have been fine with just like one or two specific functions. And I would say, yeah, that's probably true in a few cases. Do I think that every reinforcer in the world is synthesized? No, there's plenty of isolated reinforcement, as you can see from decades of research. But what's interesting here is that we looked at things past the scientific lens and into the humanity lens and said, if we do, God forbid, get a little less scientifically precise, is there a benefit? And that benefit was client preference. And hey, I would love to see what this client preference value did long-term for the student and the caregivers who were going through each intervention. Because I bet we would have gotten better social validity scores and potentially even better fidelity long-term when we put client preference above scientific precision, given that we still had a successful intervention. What does this mean? It means that centering client voices, centering oftentimes the autistic voice, is the first step to any good intervention. That means listening and then designing with that, with what you learned in mind, so that your intervention can be better suited to go the distance, to last the long term, and have better social validity and fidelity for a long period of time, even after you're gone. This article, not a copy-paste research article, but gives us really good perspective on this conversation of what is the place of non-functional reinforcers in the assessment and treatment of challenging behavior. And I think this article showed that their place is within the behavior reduction and preference world. All right, that's all I got for you. It's a pretty fast one. I love articles like this because they have a clear analysis and treatment, and then bam, we're into the results, and I give you something to take home each day. Anyways, I'll see you in the next one. We got another shorter one coming up. I think you're going to enjoy it. I'll talk to you later. So there you have it. That's the end of our podcast. It would mean the world to me if you commented or shared, or whoever you're interacting with this content, subscribe if you're on a podcast platform. It means the world to me. And also, if you're available, give a review to this podcast. Give it 5 stars if you love it. Give me feedback if not. I read every single one, and it does a ton to boost the visibility of content like this in the overall algorithm. If you want to continue engaging with the Behaviorist Book Club, the best place to go is the ABA Cafe Facebook group. You can find it just by typing in the ABA Cafe into your Facebook search bar. It is a group of research-minded practitioners engaging and collaborating together to become better behavior analysts through our application of practitioner-focused research. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.